The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Now, as you heard over the last 48 hours, Donald Trump put on his own screeching bit of road rage, a U-turn on a monumental scale, as he turned around the tariff ship and has decided that there is a three-month pause on non-Asian, or I should say non-Chinese tariffs, but he is persisting in a very, very difficult and challenging trade war with China. We don't know where that's going to end, but there is a pause for us in the European Union. So where does this all go to mean, and who would win in an overall trade war between the United States and China if it is what it comes to? Joining me now to discuss all this is Kiri Paramore, who is a professor of Asian studies at UCC. Good afternoon, Kiri.
Hi, Emmett. How are you?
Thank you for joining us. Listen, I'm great. This has been an interesting 48 hours. The bond market, the share market, just the accumulation of it all. Some business leaders around Donald Trump seemingly have persuaded him. There's an extraordinary story in the Wall Street Journal this afternoon that he effectively told his acquaintances that he didn't mind a recession, but when he thought there was going to be a depression, he decided to step back from the cliff edge, which isn't necessarily that reassuring. We'll have to see whether he does a deal. He has been talking a little bit about whether he should do a deal or not. So let's hear what he's been saying.
Nothing's over yet, but we have a tremendous amount of spirit from other countries, including China. China wants to make a deal. They just don't know how quite to go about it. You know, it's one of those things they don't know quite. They're proud people. And President Xi's a proud man. I know him very well. And they don't know quite how to go about it, but they'll figure it out. They're in the process of figuring it out, but they want to make a deal.
So there you go, Kerry. They are a proud people. They are a proud people, but they're also a tough people. Would you agree with me that if this is going to be a competition of who can suffer the most, that is a battle that the United States could lose?
What do you think, Emmett? It sounds like Donald Trump thinks that Xi Jinping needs to go over to Britain and get some advice from Starmer on how to approach Donald Trump. Do you think that might be the way to do it?
I don't know about that. The reason I ask my question is because we had the 2 years of COVID when most of the population were pretty much locked down by the Chinese authorities, which showed us that when they need to control their population, whether we like it or not, they're pretty good at it. So that might play a part in all of this, do you think, in terms of if they have to ask their own people to take a bit of economic pain, they can make them do that.
Yeah, but I don't think we want to get drawn into Donald Trump's idea that it's China versus America, and I think that's the way he's trying to frame it at the moment. A lot of you've got to remember the free trade framework that we've had for the last, you know, increasingly, and since World War II, and just becoming more and more free, that's been the vehicle through which all these developing countries have been sort of pulled out of poverty. And if you look at countries around China, like Vietnam, for instance. Well, China, you know, about 17% of China's GDP is earned through exports. Vietnam, 95% of their GDP is achieved through exports. And about 30-35% of that goes to America, and then 15% goes to China. So, you know, a lot of these countries are sort of the supply lines and stuff are integrated all along that Western Pacific coast, even places like Australia. You know, a lot of the GDP comes from iron ore sales that go into Chinese industry, Korean industry, and so forth. So it's difficult to see how all those supply chains and production chains that interact between those countries could be taken apart.
Now, Kerry, can I ask you a question that's kind of intrigued me? What is China's ultimate game here? Is it just to go back to the trade relationships it had, you know, maybe late last year or even under President Biden? Is it actually to best the United States in this trade war? Or is it to have some kind of reset in some way where they can kind of settle down into a new phase? So what do you think they want out of all of this?
Well, I'm sure, you know, the Chinese leadership wouldn't like me saying this, but I think ultimately they're being reactive. Remember, last year it was the European Union that slapped 20-30% tariffs on Chinese electric car exports. I've got an old diesel and I was going to change to an electric car, but I don't think I'll be doing that anymore, you know. So yeah, that was the EU that did that. And also America's been clamping down on trade from China, you know, from the first Trump presidency all the way through Biden as well. So if you look, for instance, Chinese goods exports to America dropped by 20% in 2023. I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think the figures are out yet if they've dropped by a similar amount in 2024. So China is faced, especially, of course, from the United States, but also from the European Union, with an increasingly protectionist global framework. And so they sort of saw that coming for a while, and they have to react to that. And one of the ways to react to that is, of course, to increase domestic consumption, which China is getting towards being wealthy enough to do. And you see that percentage of the export as a percentage of GDP is down to still high at 17 to 20%. You know, I think America's about 11% or something like that. But, you know, they've had to react and develop in a way that works with the increasingly protectionist environment that we all find ourselves in.
Now, having said all of that, obviously they have it's an authoritarian society. They can suppress information. Youth unemployment in China is like huge. Like, it's a real sort of social ill that they have at the moment. So it's not without risk. I mean, the economy here could be badly damaged. I know you might argue the American economy could be damaged more. But for China, it's not coming into a good position. Property slump has been pretty bad. As I said, they have youth unemployment at just quite high levels. So they're not without their vulnerabilities. Would you agree with me there?
China has huge vulnerabilities. I mean, massive vulnerabilities. I mean, like all other East Asian countries, the demographic situation is bleak, right? The population isn't growing fast enough. And for all the East Asian countries, for Taiwan, for Korea, for Japan, it's much worse even than Europe. That's one problem. Another problem is, I mean, ultimately they are just like Japan was back in the day. They have to import their primary resources. So, you know, to make those electric cars, they obviously need iron ore. Well, they have to get that from Australia, you know. And of course, you know, if America ever really wanted to really go hardcore, they could just switch that off. They could just stop. They are totally within the power of the United States to just stop Australian iron ore going, I mean, militarily if necessary, or just tell the Australians what to do and the Australians would oblige. They could stop that iron ore. A lot of their fuel, you know, comes in by sea from the Middle East. So, you know, China's a very weak country. And remember as well that, you know, strong and weak. It's a conundrum in that sense. And remember, there's still huge areas of China are still quite undeveloped, you know, have terrible poverty. So you have, along the eastern seaboard, you've had this incredible development. I can't remember the exact figures, but you know, however many tens or hundreds of millions of people have been dragged out of poverty over the last 10 years, which is an incredible achievement. There's still plenty of millions of people left in poverty. It's still technically a developing country.
And Kerry,
right? It doesn't have the strength that the European Union or the United States have in terms of that accumulation of capital and human capital as well. It doesn't quite have that.
Now, they have seemingly, from what I could gather, and I'm not over there, but just watching it as an observer, they have two ways they could really mess America up if they wanted. One would be to sell their US treasury bonds that they have, a big stock of them. So that would be a big market event. And they could cut off these rare earth minerals. I know they've cut off some of them, but they could really tighten the net there. So it does indicate to you that they don't want to deal a knockout blow here to America. They just want to, as you've said, get back to where they were or kind of settle the thing down. So they don't want to move in for the kill. Is that fair?
Oh, absolutely. And America, like I said, America could do much worse things than tariffs if they wish to China, right? I mean, basically, American military bases totally surround China in Okinawa, in Korea, all through Japan, in Australia, in the Philippines. So, I mean, you know, there's no question who's in the driver's seat. As always, it's the Americans, right? But, yeah, and it's interesting you say that about the use of capital and bonds and stuff, because there was this rumour going around again. There's so many rumours, and even I think Michal Martin said today, you just don't know what the truth is at the moment. But there was a rumour going around that actually the Japanese, they're also, of course, a huge holder of American bonds and equities and stuff, and that they actually had something to do with sort of reverse of course in sort of threatening a sell-off. And apparently there was a substantial sell-off from the Japanese side.
So there you go. There is a precedent there, isn't there? I mean, they could just sell their shares or sell their treasury bonds.
But again, America, this is one of the things where American supremacy is very, very clear. If you look at the capital, you know, the overall capital that's on the American, all the accumulated American stock markets compared to the capital available in Chinese stock markets, including Hong Kong and so forth. I mean, it's five, six times.
Sure. Well,
the capital they have available to them. So it's just, you know, it's just America remains supreme.
Yeah.
In these sort of basic statistical.
We all know there's going to be a deal, I suppose. Ultimately, they all end in deals. We just don't know when it's going to be. Listen, we'll leave it there. Kerry Paramore, who is a professor of Asian studies at UCC.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.